To order the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2005, and we're here to continue discussions on the budget bill for the Columbia River Gorge Commission. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 5011, which is the budget bill for the Columbia River Gorge Commission, and ask Mr. Gorse to come forward and talk to us about inflationary factors. And Ms. Jordan, in the meantime, we have some pieces that need to be introduced into the public record. Could you just give us a little heads up on those?
I would be happy to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, at your place, I have placed a packet of three letters that have come in and written testimony supporting the Columbia River Gorge Commission budget. All three of them are in support the budget. One is from the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. A second one is from Catherine Young from the Dalles, and Brian and Cynthia Winter from Corbett, Oregon. And there is a copy of some written testimony, but I believe this gentleman will be presenting it today.
Okay.
So that's what you have.
Mr. Gorse, please proceed.
For the record, my name is Jim Gorse with Department of Administrative Services, Budget Management Division. And yesterday, you folks asked for a breakout of how we went from legislative, the 2003-05 legislatively adopted budget for the Columbia River Gorge to the governor's recommended budget. And before, in front of you, you should have a spreadsheet printout that shows, and I'll go through it real quickly, line by line, if you don't mind. Last year, including emergency board appearances, the Columbia River Gorge's legislatively adopted budget was $631,600. We added inflation onto the commissioner's expenses at the standard rate of 2.4%. And then there's also inflation on a September 2004 e-board request at 2.4%. It was a $30,000 request.
What was that e-board request?
That was the holdback that the committee or that the legislature had put in the budget last biennium, and the agency was,
yes, I thought it was. Okay.
Came into request.
On the work plan.
On the work plan.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
Then we have treasury fees. They're standard. They're $10 a month for $240. There's an increase in the DAS price list, DAS assessments of $4,131. And the DAS risk assessment, as we talked about yesterday, at $40,465. Then there's the employee cost exception that we talked about yesterday, too. That's at 13% versus the 2.4%, and that came to $51,761. Then there's also the increase in Washington budget and allotment system charges. That's essentially the same thing as DAS assessment charges on our side. Their charges also went up on the Washington side, so they're $1,294. There's a non-uniform rent increase at 5.3%. The board, as I understand it, had some unpalatable rent conditions, asbestos, and a few other issues at their old place. They had to move into a new place, and it had a little bit higher rent, and so that comes out to $1,710 for the biennium. And then the package 100, the planning position, comes in at $137,133. And that gave us a grand total of, for the governor's recommended budget, of
$869,247. So the 03-05 legislatively approved budget, did that also include the $30,000 holdback?
Yes, it did.
Then I guess I'm confused about why there was an
Madam Chair, the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the budget was developed, that $30,000 was not included in the roll-up cost, but just the percentage, the incremental cost. But the $30,000 was included, but not the inflation rate.
Okay. And then the non-uniform rent increase at 5.3%, Did the rent increase at like 11-point-something percent? Is this half of the inflationary cost?
Madam Chair, yes, it is.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Let's move forward then into the public testimony piece of this. I have four people signed up to testify. If there's anyone else that wants to testify, I will just ask at the end of these four people testifying and bring you forward at that time. Can I call forward Bob Leeper, Michael Lang, and Peter Cornelison? Cornelison.
Cornelison.
Please begin.
Good afternoon, Bob Leeper, Troutdale. Remember the old Wendy's slogan, "Where's the beef?"
For the record, could you repeat your name?
Bob Leeper, L-E-I-P-P-E-R. I have a variation of that slogan for this legislature. Where's the check? Where is the check for $27 million? That's the amount the Gorge Commission could assess on one property owner in Multnomah County and probably Multnomah County itself for proven violations that Multnomah County and the oversight authority, the Gorge Commission, have ignored. They don't have a check for you for $27 million. They probably don't even have a check for 27 cents. The Gorge Commission has ignored the lack of enforcement in Multnomah County and multiple other properties over the last approximately 5 years in spite of photographic records of unpermitted construction and other specific violations. Over the past several years, the Gorge Commission and staff have used various excuses for the lack of enforcement in Multnomah County and the lack of consistency throughout the Gorge. First, it was lack of funding. I said, no, it is not a matter of funding, it is a matter of priorities. The Gorge Commission recently completed a management plan review. They could have addressed the enforcement and consistency issues, but chose not to. Instead, their priority was to debate and spend scarce time and resources on the color of back of traffic signs, where the road departments could replace safety guardrails without going through a full review and permit process, and those pesky flagpoles that have been such a problem, but not including the flags. The Gorge Commission included retaining walls under 2 foot high, even allowing them under an expedited review process, but refused to define what constitutes a retaining wall, and then said you could not disturb the ground without specifically defining disturb the ground. Can you explain how to construct a 2-foot-high retaining wall without disturbing the ground, as that term is generally accepted? Common sense failed to be a priority. Another excuse for not pursuing violations in Multnomah County was that the Gorge Commission and staff didn't want to get involved until Multnomah County refused to take action. Of course, Multnomah County is smarter than to refuse. They just denied and delayed and then changed their enforcement code with the approval of the Gorge Commission, wiping out any potential fines from Multnomah County, but not from the Gorge Commission, for existing proven violations. The Gorge Commission even approved this new enforcement procedure, which eliminated nearly all of that pesky mandatory language which required specific actions on the part of Multnomah County code enforcement planners without even having the key document which explained how the new enforcement would be conducted. Remember, the Gorge Commission is the NSA oversight authority for the counties. At the March Gorge Commission meeting, which I could not attend, Director Bennett finally said, "Mr. Leeper is correct. It is a matter of priorities." I nearly fell out of my chair listening to that statement on that tape. But nothing has changed, and from yesterday's presentation, it appears nothing is planned to change. Multnomah County does not have to comply with the same regulations as other counties. For example, at the March Gorge Commission public meeting, a case in Klickitat County involved a trailer allegedly being used for a second dwelling unit without a permit. Total time for investigation resolution, about 6 months. A nearly identical violation complaint in Multnomah County has sat uninvestigated for 6.5 years, and this is not the one answering Senator DeBate's question from yesterday on the longest enforcement case. If Multnomah County had listed one violation which they ignored, it would now be over a decade old. Multnomah County simply decided to sweep under the rug a building official's note that a house addition needed an NSA approval. At what point in time will the Gorge Commission require compliance or take action itself, if ever? In my neighborhood, there are at least 26 violations on 8 different properties, including 2 outstanding proven violations and approximately 10 uninvestigated on one property, whose owner was recently rewarded with a downsizing from SMA to the less restrictive GMA. I agree with Senator Wyden's ad slogan last year, which showed a view of the Gorge in the background as he intoned, quote, "Oregon's special places need protecting," unquote. The question is, protecting from what and from whom? What is right and what does work? The Gorge Commission is still experimenting because they have ignored their monitoring mandate and they have ignored enforcement and consistency issues. The figure of 99.5% of applications in Oregon approved with conditions to protect resources sounds good until you read the November 2000 scenic monitoring report from the Commission, which shows a 49% non-compliance rate for projects that have gone through the review process. And by the way, this does not include the 11% which are partial and does not include does not count the developments that did not get a required permit. Big houses, a big issue. Martha Bennett said yesterday in response to a question about this by replying she thought the largest was 7,000 square feet in Clark County. Not yet approved. Not even close. A house in Multnomah County is claimed by the owner to be 14,000 square feet, and that does not include a 10-car garage. If you want to believe the Friends of the Gorge, a risky thing, it is closer to 21,000 square feet, including the garage, decks, and covered entry. And who approved this house? A former director of the Gorge Commission with the Gorge Commission's full knowledge. Just down the road is a house approximately 10,000 square feet, and next to that is another in the 7,000 square foot range, both referencing the 14,000 square foot house by Multnomah County planners for size justification. Big houses, flagpoles, guardrails, and sandboxes are not the problem. The problem is not texture from 2 miles away or a casino in an urban industrial zone outside of the NSA boundaries. The problem is location, site, design, color, materials, and other issues of development, air pollution, economic development, and out-of-control planners, which have been a part of the discussion in the plan review process by the public and by some on the Gorge Commission. This experiment has gone wrong and needs to be set back on track. Also, last session, the legislature attached 6 caveats to the Gorge Commission budget. As Representative Morgan said, it was a matter of trust. Trust is still an issue. At the last Commission Budget Committee here at meeting that I attended, Director Bennett said 2 of those 6 items were, quote, put on hold or delayed, unquote. Is that what you intended? Do you think the Gorge Commission got your message? It is clear to me that a stronger message needs to be sent. It is not a matter of the original NSA concept being fatally flawed, although it may be time for Congress to revisit this experiment. I hope that this legislature reduces the Gorge Commission budget and, in addition, or at the very least, places restrictions on those funds, restrictions that cannot be ignored, delayed, or put on hold. One of those strict restrictions I would hope would be a requirement that any NSA-related meetings between Gorge Commission staff and county planners or between the 6 county planning staff to be open to the public. It has been suggested by Director Bennett that those meetings be secret. The public deserves to know how their tax dollars are being spent. Oregon has better use for scarce tax dollars than support an out-of-control bureaucracy. I thank you very much for your time.
Questions from the committee members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Bob, do you have in your last paragraph here, you talk about that Director Bennett has suggested that meetings be in secret. Do you have that as part of meeting minutes or... is that something you overheard her say, or is that written, documented?
That's been said at least twice at Gorge public meetings, yes.
So it should be in some public minutes somewhere?
Well, I don't know if it's in the meeting minutes or not. I've had a problem with my computer, I guess. I can read everybody else's PDF files except the Gorge Commission for some reason, so I haven't been able to read the last few months of their meeting minutes. But I'm sure it's on the tapes if I got the tapes. I don't want to spend, you know, $10 per tape or whatever I have to pay to get the tapes out there just to get that one statement. But I don't think Director Bennett would deny that was what the intention was, to have the meeting secret, not open to the public. And all I'm asking for is the public to be able to hear what they have to say, not to have to say anything.
Madam Chair, that would concern me is the National Scenic Act, the Gorge Act, does it exempt from Oregon's public meeting laws any meetings of the commission?
Actually, Representative Krupp, no, it's not exempt.
I wouldn't think so. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
If in fact that's a reality and that's what's said, it needs to be documented. They don't want us to act on information without documentation.
Chair.
Chair, Mayor.
Representative Schultz.
Yeah, and I'd like to find out exactly what kind of meetings we're talking about. There's a lot of private meetings go on in this building. Does every meeting have to be? I just want to know exactly, specifically, what kind of meetings. Is the board voting on something? You know, there's some executive session situations that we're involved in at the local government level. I'm just curious to see exactly, specifically, what kind of meetings we're talking about. And that can go to the director or anybody else that wants to answer.
Mr. Leeper, do you recall?
Chair Morgan, Representative, they are not meetings concerning the... my understanding is they're not meetings concerning the quorum of the board of the commissioners themselves. They are meetings between commission staff and county planners, or between the six county planners getting together and colluding as to what they're going to interpret and to apply. And that's the problem that I have, is that there's so many variations in here that each county is going to come up with their own interpretation, and it just adds to more inconsistency in the gorge.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. For the record, my name is Michael Lang. I'm Conservation Director for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. Appreciate the opportunity to provide comments to you today about the Columbia River Gorge Commission's budget. And I know I'll forget this if I don't bring it up now. So the six county meetings that Mr. Leeper referred to were once open to the public. They're not, as he correctly said, a quorum of the commissioners. They are planning staff that meet and discuss implementation issues. Our organization, as with other people, found them that useful to attend just to see the kind of implementation issues that are discussed. However, I am aware, and I believe Mr. Leeper's memory is better than mine on this, that at some point in the relatively recent history, those meetings are no longer open to the public. So, although, again, it's not a meeting of the appointed commissioners themselves, I would agree that there's value to have those open to the public. It just helps everybody understand the issues that are being discussed by planners in implementing the Scenic Area Act. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the budget. A little about Friends of the Columbia Gorge. Our organization is a nonprofit organization with 4,200 members, mostly in Oregon and Washington, and approximately 200 within the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area itself. We work to protect the scenic beauty and the natural and cultural heritage of the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. We do that through public education, advocacy, and responsible stewardship. We sponsor also recreational hikes and activities in the gorge, and we also support public land acquisition from willing sellers. That's just a little bit about us. Friends requests that the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources match the level of funding provided by or approved by the Washington State Legislature just recently at the close of their session. The amount of funding that was approved by the House and Senate was $827,000, as I understand, for joint funding. That would be generally the level matched by the Oregon State Legislature. And I have to admit that I often get as confused about this budget process as, or more confused than the members here. I can't keep track of it all the time. I understand now there's some additional funding for staff pay increases. It was also tacked on at the end of the Washington budget that involves about $68,000. So that would be in addition to the $827,000 that the legislature, Washington State Legislature, approved.
So may I just...
Sure.
Sorry for being out in the hall here, but you're saying that there's $68,000 in staff compensation increases that are not included in the proposal that we're looking at?
This would... And Chair Morgan and members of the subcommittee, I apologize. I just found this out today, and I don't have a copy of the entire state of Washington budget. It's all rolled into one, as you know. So I'm not exactly clear on that funding. The point that Friends of the Columbia Gorge would like to make is that we believe it's important for Oregon to match a level of funding provided by the state of Washington. The Columbia River Gorge joins our states together, this effort to create the Scenic Area Act and the Bi-State Compact also joins us together in a joint commitment to protect the gorge and to provide for its economy by funding, in part, the Columbia River Gorge Commission. So I have to apologize that, again, this is late information. I haven't had a chance to really examine it, but in general, our organization supports matching that level of funding commitment as approved by Washington State. Thanks.
Comments from the committee members.
Madam Chair, Michael, thanks for your thoughts today. Could you address Bob's first paragraph? Do you have a copy of his written testimony?
I'm sorry, I don't. If I could, I believe there was just one left up there. Okay. And the first
paragraph talks about basically what appears to be to me is what he actually ended his presentation with. He was talking about inconsistency in enforcement issues and those types of things. As you, as friends of the Gorge, is that an issue of concern to you, in inconsistency in enforcement, where one county may be more acting on more enforcement issues than another county? Is that an issue that's relevant to you guys at all?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, it, to a certain extent, that is true, and it in part is because of the structure of the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area Act, how implementation of the land use ordinances and some enforcement responsibility is delegated to each one of the counties that implements a scenic area ordinance. But however, the Columbia River Gorge Commission is, as we call it, the backstop. They're the ones there where a county does not have the funding, or for whatever other reason it's not enforcing its ordinances, the Columbia River Gorge Commission has that authority to step in and try to bring around compliance where there are land use violation issues. In our experience, normally they do that by working with the county planning office and any compliance staff within the county. There isn't enough money to ensure compliance of the Scenic Area Act, and I believe one of the items asked, in addition to just the base level, is to provide more funding for technical assistance and working with the counties, and also to allow the commission to increase its compliance load too, up to 10 to 12 cases per year. So we believe that the budget request that came from our Governor Kulongoski and also was addressed by Washington provides adequate funding to address some of the enforcement issues that were raised by Mr. Leeper, and certainly that we've noticed too. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate that.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
I'll pass out my written testimony that covers the rest of the issues we have. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Peter Cornelison. I live at 1003 Fifth Street in the Heights in Hood River. And I'm a former small manufacturing business owner. And about 5 years ago, I moved to Hood River. And currently, I'm a self-employed as an investor, and I work part-time for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. However, I'm testifying today as an individual because, really, the job for Friends is sort of inconsequential for me. I do it because I love the gorge, and it's serving the gorge that I do the work for. So, I want to tell you today that the gorge, to me, has great economic vitality these days. It is a place where you go to a Rotary Club meeting and there's like 75 people there. The Chamber of Commerce is firing on all cylinders. McKed in the Dalles has got like five initiatives that they're working on: wine growing, small business technology stuff. Like, there's a lot going on. You've probably heard Google's coming to the Dalles. Well, yeah. So
so people sit it down.
Well, it turns out, I checked out why they need power to run their blogging system, and they need water to cool all these servers. So the Dalles is a perfect place. But the other reason, and many businesses are finding this out, that their employees want to live in the Gorge because of its resources. Excuse me. There's a group of small technology businesses that has one of their mission statements is play hard, work hard. And they're able to play hard because people do that in the Gorge. I mean, windsurfing, mountain biking, kayaking, etc. And the Gorge Commission and the National Scenic Act makes that possible. It is that resource that draws these employees that work in the high tech businesses and many others to want to live in the Gorge. So my point is that we have this very unusual and unique model. The National Scenic Act is really a very flexible sort of a document. It allows growth. It also allows conservation. And it's unique in that way. In order for the Gorge Commission to deal with the challenges of growth, they've got to have adequate money. And just as an observer, I've been to, I don't know, perhaps 6 Gorge Commission meetings, and my impression is that they have been budget constrained. I mean, almost strangled to the point of not being able to do their job. And I don't think it's fair to the intent of the Act or really the best welfare of the region to have them budget constrained. What the effect that has, it allows people have to apply to get zoning variances, etc. And if they don't have the money to deal with those people, it creates frustration on the part of the citizens, and so people get a bad impression of the Gorge Commission. So I that's just one example. Another example is that they need money for enforcement. As has been said, that's one of their jobs. But if they don't have adequate money, they can't fulfill that role, et cetera. And there's a lot of other things that go with that. So to wrap it up, the commission has a big job. You know, multiple counties, 2 states, 70 miles long, 5 miles wide. That's the area encompassed in the National Scenic Area. And they need money to do the job. So that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Comments from Mr. Cornelison. Representative Schaffer.
Actually, Madam Chair, I just wondering, is the department going to get a chance to come up and respond to some of the comments made today?
Some time.
Okay, that's all I want. Thank you.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. Lang based on his testimony. That's okay. Michael, I had a question regarding the budget priorities that you had listed in your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
One question I had is there any way, I mean, I find it really difficult to imagine how they're able to do some of these inventories without having a full GIS system. And I'm just wondering, maybe this is something to ask the commission as well, but I know that the BPA puts a lot of money into that area, and they've been doing the Bonneville Power Authority and the Northwest Power Planning, whatever it's called now. They changed their name. So conservation folks have been doing their whole sub-basin planning program. And so I'm wondering if you know if, and I'm pretty sure they have a pretty comprehensive GIS, if there's any way to piggyback onto the work they've done, at least just to get some of the mapping and overlays created for that sub-basin planning process. Do you know if that's ever been looked into, or anything?
Chair Morgan,
might be more appropriate for the commission.
It probably would be. Our it's shocking that an organization with a mandate and the statutory responsibilities that the Gorge Commission has does not have a functioning GIS system when is my understanding most county planning departments have functioning GIS, and it's a critical tool to do modern planning of any sort. So we have supported funding the commission through the legislative appropriations for a GIS system. Now, you raise an excellent point. There are other ways, in fact, piggybacking perhaps with other federal or there aren't any other regional agencies they could piggyback with, but federal agencies to put together a GIS system, but you still need the staffing. It, as you know, it requires really for the job the commission has a full-time staff person to put the system together and maintain it. We're finally getting our own up-to-date GIS system, and it's not up yet, but we're able to purchase most of the data now, and it takes a staff person dedicated to it, and even consultants we're having to pay for to help us get it going. So I think you raise a good point. There may be other ways to get at it, but our position is it absolutely is critical to the Gorge Commission doing its job. Yeah, thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Comment. I mean, it's, we have one person that's not happy with a couple of people that are. We're always talking about staffing. I haven't been in one committee yet. People haven't wanted more staffing because we're going to save the world with this thing. And the fact is, we can't afford it. I mean, until we do something with our economy, we don't have the money to help you out. Sorry.
Madam Chair, if I could respond. I think that it's one side of the coin is we can't afford it, and the other side of the coin is that we can't afford not to afford it. And it's such a basic, critical thing for the Commission to carry out its functions that there may, in fact, be a payoff by funding it, this GIS program, and keeping it going. So I just raise that point. It's a two-sided coin.
Did you just hear that in the Human Services Subcommittee?
I was like, what am I going to choose? Am I going to choose K through 12 children or your staff? So what am I going to choose? I'm going to choose the K through 12. That's where my priorities are. Or community colleges or Oregon Health Science University. I mean, that's right. I understand it's an important thing. It's nice to want some of these things, but where are we going to put our resources?
Senator Nelson, are you done?
Oh, I am done. I'm
okay. Senator Shields, you have the floor.
As Friends of the Gorge, you probably also talk with the Washington side of the river folks and with the Washington legislature. How is it that they always seem to come up with more money than Oregon does for the Gorge Commission? I mean, I know that we split it 50-50, but their proposals are usually thousands of dollars higher than ours. We say we can't afford it here, and yet we're not in a vacuum. Everybody in the country is hurting for money. Do you have any comments on that?
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, I think that there may be a couple of reasons. For one, they just have a bigger budget, and they have more revenue sources. So admittedly, this is a very small budget that we're discussing today in the grand scheme of things. But it, you know, there's not unlimited resources, obviously, and it's perhaps a little easier for them to afford it, even when they have a $2 billion budget shortfall, or it's over that right now. They are able to find the money. There also is a commitment to carrying out the bi-state agreement with Oregon to provide adequate funding for the Gorge Commission to follow through and implement the National Scenic Area Act in a way that comes as close as we can to fulfilling the purposes and standards of this act and this pact that we have between our states to help protect this national scenic resource. So I think it's a combination of those two things, bigger budgets and the commitments there. Thanks.
But it's interesting to have a bigger budget, but they also have twice our deficit. So they got twice our people and twice our deficit.
They also, Senator, I believe, have a budget that's about twice as big as ours.
Yeah.
And they just raised a lot of taxes in their budget.
They did.
A lot.
I think we have a budget deficit of $2 billion. We could surely use that.
I've been told that we have $1 billion to their $2 billion. That's what I was. working for on all these programs.
Senator Schultz, do you have further comments or questions? Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
I appreciate you giving us your time today. I'll call forward Jim Denton and anyone else that wishes to testify that hasn't signed up. Please come forward at this time.
I got the table to myself.
But please proceed, Mr. Denton.
My name is Jim Denton. I live in Hood River, just outside of the town itself. I moved to Hood River County 20-ish years ago. I came to the county without a job. I know a whole lot of other people who moved to Hood River without jobs when they got there. A lot of them took temporary work in the ski industry or in the windsurfing industry or whatever. I always hear that the National Scenic Area hurts economic development, but that's not really what I found. I mean, I think the reason why Hood River County has high unemployment is there's a whole lot of people that want to live there and are willing to show up like myself without work when they first get there. And then somehow the county provides most people with work, maybe not everybody at one time, but they've provided work for me and a lot of other people. I've bought and sold houses. I've sold at least 3 houses to people who were showing up in the county without work. It's not like they had a job and they were moving to the county because of that job. They just said, I want to live in Hood River County. I want to be close to Mount Hood. I want to be close to the National Gorge Scenic Area, and I'm going to move there and then find a job. So when I hear people say that the scenic area hurts employment, and as proof they cite high unemployment in Hood River County, I just think there's other reasons for that. So. Okay, thank you.
Comments from Mr. Denton. Would you, Senator Schultz, did you have a question?
No, I was just thanking him for perspective. I always appreciate it when citizens come as far as they do.
If you'd be so kind to slide the microphone to the left there.
Thank you very much. I'm Liz Frankel, and I am here representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and I won't take any trouble. I just would like our testimony made part of the record, and we essentially are asking that you support the budget, the governor's budget, which is very close to what Washington State came through with. Obviously, we don't know that number, and from the league standpoint, we think that the risk of not managing the gorge appropriately is very high. And that's economically, in terms of recreation and all of those things which you're hearing about. People like to live there. They want to live there. They want to work there. Part of that is because the gorge is the gorge. And to add to all of that, of course, there is a mandate that says we must manage it. Thank you very much.
I have no one else signed up to testify, so with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5011, and we have actually concluded all the work that we need to do on House Bill 5011.
Madam Chair, before we do, I actually had a couple of questions of Director Bennett based on...
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely forgot about
Mr.
that.
Mr. Leeper's testimony.
Representative Crum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Martha, do you have a copy of Mr. Leeper's testimony? He's kind enough to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. In his second, on the first page in his second paragraph, he talks about the plan review that's been accomplished, the management plan, and that there are.
Is this to shut me up? Thank you.
No, it's to sweeten me up. It must be.
A little more energy.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you want me to shut up.
You can get any down here. Left.
Well, here.
Yeah, you're already too sweet anyway.
He talks about Multnomah County, that they've interpreted the updated plan to possibly, and I use the words possibly because his verbiage is it may now be required,
mm-hmm.
to get a permit for a 6-inch high curb around your driveway to get a permit for an 8-foot by 8-foot sandbox in your backyard constructed out of 2x12s, even if it's not visible from a key viewing area. You know, I'm just a poor farmer, an emphasis on poor. And I'm having some difficulty, and, you know, I try to live my life by common sense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that just seems a little problematic for me to accept as common sense. If part of your plan review allows a county like Multnomah County to possibly require permits for these kinds of things, I find that very difficult to accept, first of all. And could you comment? I mean, does your plan, is Multnomah County really possibly considering requiring these types of things?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, let me first say that we're in the process. Let me explain how the management plan gets adopted, and then let me tell you where we are. And then let me pledge to you to go back and find out what I know about these particular issues, because Mr. Alipra did mention these issues to me last Friday, but I don't yet know whether they're in Multnomah County's ordinance or not. So after we adopt the management plan and it gets approved by the Secretary of Agriculture, goes to the counties for the adoption, and they put measures into their own land use ordinances, they're allowed to be more restrictive than the management plan. So they can restrict more than the management plan. The management plan's a floor, and they can go above the floor if they want. They circulate those ordinances to us for review, and we determine whether they're consistent with the management plan. That's the process part we're in right now. They've sent us a draft of their ordinance. They gave us, unfortunately, for a several hundred page ordinance, 3 days to review it. So I can't tell you right now whether these things are in their ordinance or not. But what I will do is go back and check. I will also tell you that we didn't get to every single issue we wanted to get during the plan review. There may have been some holdover issues in the old management plan that don't really make intuitive sense that are still in there, and I don't know what they are at this point.
And Madam Chair, if I may follow up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you. He goes on to talk about the commission, and I'll just read it here, included retaining walls under 2 feet high, even allowing them under expedited review process, but refused to define what constitutes a retaining wall, and then said you couldn't disturb the ground for expedited review items without specifically defining disturb the ground. And his point is, how can you be expected to construct a 2 foot wide or 2 foot high retaining wall without disturbing the ground? And having built a few things in my life, I would have to agree with that. Is this an outcome of part of your plan review, management plan?
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Krupp, please forgive me. There were several hundred items that were dealt during plan review, and I don't rightly remember everything that happened. I do know that small retaining walls were supposed to be allowed without review. Whether that will also relate to the ground disturbance question, I don't know. There is some ground disturbance that is allowed without permits, but what I need to do is go back and double check. I honestly, sincerely do not remember the details of. I do remember retaining walls were allowed without permit, but I don't remember if that conflicts with the ground disturbance section.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll just conclude my comments and questioning by saying that please do get back to us with that, if you could, if it pleases the Chair through staff.
Well, in fact, what I would request, because you have the testimony before you, if you could just send us back a memo and address the issues in that report.
Madam Chair, I'd be pleased to do that. That way I will give you an accurate and not glib or flip response.
I would also encourage you, Martha, to not even consider that your planning meetings be held in secret. That is not within the spirit of Oregon's open meeting laws.
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, I'm glad you brought that up, because I would like an opportunity to respond to that publicly. First of all, the most important thing I can share with you today is that the federal law, the Scenic Area Act, requires us to have administrative proceedings that are the more restrictive of the two states. So we actually have an open meeting, sunshine set of rules that are more restrictive than Oregon's and more restrictive than Washington's, because we have to be the most restrictive of either state. All commission meetings where any decision by the policymakers might happen are held in public. What Mr. Leifer is referring to is what happens when staff from an agency get together with other staff from an agency. Mr. Lang noted that it's in the past when the six county staff folks got together, we did notice those meetings, and I have publicly said that we are not required to have those meetings be open to the public because they are staff meetings, they're technical in nature, they don't lead, if they lead to a policy recommendation, they lead to a policy recommendation to a public body that then has to have their meetings in public. We have talked about, and frankly we haven't held one of these meetings in several years because of this concern from various folks that they need to be open to the public. But let me tell you what the problems have been with having them open. The technical staff-to-staff meetings that are not required to be public open, number one, they're more expensive because we have to notice them. We have to have them in a public place. We have to have them in an ADA-accessible room. Number two, not all counties will participate. We have some counties who say that if I have to sit there in front of the public and anything I say is going to be written down and recorded, I'm not going to come. And the problem with that is when we want to have a technical discussion, and these things cover really exciting topics like what color brown really seems to work on the grass hills in the east part of the gorge, or is 14 days okay for a public comment to the Gorge Commission staff, or does Gorge Commission staff need 15 or 16 or 17 days? I mean, really very exciting topics. But we had counties who would just refuse to show up. And so when we're trying to have six-county consistency and have staff-level discussions about very technical matters, to have a county just decide they won't appear because the public's going to be there means there's no point in having them at all. And last but not least, is we were finding that we were spending a lot of time noticing a public meeting that was technical, and then we'd have to re-notice the topic and go through the whole public outreach process again on a topic when it comes to the Gorge Commission. So we were ending up with a lot of redundancy. I don't have, at this point, the staff ability to do that. If I'm either going to do the work or I'm going to have a lot of public process. And I think the other thing that I just want to share with you from some of Mr. Leeper's comments is I appreciate the fact that he understands that services that we provide are a matter of priority. And as I shared with you yesterday, we just can't get to them all at this point. There's just, we can't meet every priority. But that's enough. But I do want you to know that all meetings that are required to be open to the public are open to the public.
Madam Chair?
I would just say that in respect to the counties not willing to come to a meeting because they don't want the public
staff
to hear what they're saying, I don't care if it's staff or not, I find that wholly illogical. I find it difficult to believe that they would be unwilling to stand behind or face public scrutiny for anything they say of technical nature. I find that absurd. And I'm not blaming this to you, and I don't mean this directed at you. I blame it to them. I just find it patently absurd. In this process, everything we say and do is recorded. And if we can't defend it, we ought not be saying it in this process. And when it comes to technical issues of the law, we better be able to defend our reasoning behind the comments that we make or the discussions that we have in this building. And I just find that absurd, Madam Chair. My apologies for my passion.
Thank you. Representative Schaffer,
yeah,
you've been very patient.
Thank you. I share a good amount of a good representative from Sublimity's passion and concern.
Thanks for not saying Sublimity.
Yes, sir, and I apologize for that again to you. That was not meant to be said, but I've got a lot of mileage out of it, whether I ask or not. But, you know, every meeting in this building is not public representative, and you know it. I wish they were. maybe I wish they weren't, but, and I do appreciate the director here. Being in a little town government, there were a lot of meetings that weren't public that we had to give notice for every single thing. Oh, there's no way our budget could have done it, and we can't afford to budget everything in this building. So, but I do have a problem with staffers balking, saying no. I'm on record. I'm not going to talk. That does bother me. I don't know where to go on this. So I'm going to be real honest with you. It bothers me. But I've heard that many times. My thing is here. As a good representative pointed out, too, I mean, if there's any truth to some of this absurd 6-inch high curb, a sandbox, for God's sakes in heaven, you know, that, and what, and I have no problem with your budget either, so that's not what this has really gone way too far. And I've had the opportunity to build things in Multnomah County, so I can really, I believe this. I do. I believe it probably is going on. It's probably in the code. And it is absurd. I'm more concerned about this right here than I am. Anyway, I'll just shut up. But this is really out of control, as many other things in this world are. But
we would look forward to your comments.
Yeah, we have to do that.
Senator Shield.
Yeah, and I too look forward to discussion of that stuff. But the thing that I'm listening to, and I recognize Representative Krupp's passion about the issue, but especially if you're dealing with one of three counties in Washington State, they could care less what Representative Krupp thinks. You know, they
granted, Senator,
and two in Oregon.
Ooh.
That hurt.
Anyway, okay, my point, I think, that I was making somewhere back there is that this is a volunteer kind of thing. I mean, they can, as planners, say, given all my priorities, which things do I go to? And if this thing is going to become an open for public record debate of the colors of
brown,
do I want to do that, or do I want to do any of six things over here that are on my agenda too? You know, I mean, these are planners, and in fact, you know, we look around our building right here, and I was just cued in as to the contents of a leadership meeting that occurred on my side of the building. Well, that wasn't a public meeting, you know. It would be interesting to see if all the presidents and all the speakers' meetings and the meetings of all their staffs were all in public, you know. So, you know, we just have to deal with the world we're dealt with, I think. And I appreciate that you didn't address those to her because she didn't have a control over this. She's trying to run a commission with six counties that are, they've got their own autonomy, and they show it. She's probably best compared to a caucus administrator or somebody that's trying to herd the cats around here, you know. And I don't know about your side of the building, Representative Krupp, but on our side, it's pretty tough work herding those cats, getting them to go anywhere at the same time.
And I appreciate your comments, Senator, because I'm a cat lover. I have two house cats, and I know precisely what you're talking about. And no offense, Madam Chair, but they're both females. And I'm surrounded by females at home. And
keep it up, and the fur will fly, Representative.
I knew you were going to say something.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming forward to answer those questions. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5011. And tomorrow we will be undertaking a discussion of the Department of Forestry budget. So with that in mind, I will adjourn this committee and we'll...